Thank you, everyone. It was really exciting. I've been here from the first session, so lots of things. But just to wrap up everything, I was thinking, so isn't it to have a moon village is a big claim, because everything that I get today is just focusing on specific fields, like from medical, from industry, and different things. But for myself, as a person who shifted from urban planning to remote sensing, I was thinking, so we invest lots of money, we invest lots of energy, let's say two years, 20 years later, we're going to have a village, and is that village have identity? Or are we going to have some sort of lunar cities like we have in different countries now, kind of dead cities that people even don't want to leave there? So I was thinking, do we have some sort of strategical plan for next 20 years, considering lots of aspects? I see there is lots of potentials here, but in terms of have a comprehensive vision, I see a big lack here. Do we have something to cover this lack?
Not yet. That's what Moon Village Association is about, actually working on that, preempting what's going to come and working on that. But in terms of colonies, establishments on Mars, there is a paper that came from social studies. So it's a group that does social studies in policy and politics. They actually suggested a roadmap of how that will look. And they took in account all of the things that happened through Earth in different historical moments, in different power struggles, and they suggested a model. And if you just Google idea for space society, that paper should come up. It's open source. So academics do think about it, but let's see what we have from our panel members.
I'm going to go on one little part of that and why, you know, it's exciting to have long-term visions, because you have a lot of steps to get through. We've moved from big government spending billions of dollars doing exploration work, and we're now moving into the more exciting part, which is the commercial sector seeing this as a commercially viable opportunity. So we can go and send and set up a village, and we can spend the entire GDP of the country to do that, just so that we can all go there and go, oh yes, my footprint's there, yeah. That's one exciting step. But we need to make this something that is something that can be sustaining and self-sustaining. And one of the ways to do that is to make it so that there's a real commercial agenda and opportunity. And that's where Australia is trying to get its little niche bit in. We've missed the big government part of spending on major missions, and we're going to contribute by putting some of the best skills that Australia has into making and being part of creating a village. And the baby steps to get that is to actually see, you know, for instance, like the Lunar Gateway project or the Moon Race or all the activities that are going to it, is to be a part of those steps to create that village. Because the village is like the end goal, is it? But, you know, your village is going to be constantly expanding and it'll change. And the thing that we're excited about in the agency is that it's going to be the commercial sector, and it's going to be people like people here that see a great vision and an idea and can make it a commercial reality to make it real, and to say there's actually a very good reason that we should go there beyond just, you know, the scientific outcome of it, the excitement.
Yeah, and it might have already been mentioned today that just about 2 weeks ago NASA announced that, you know, it was going to get back to the moon and stay on the moon by 2028. So big, bold mission, analogous to that back in the 1960s. But what was different was that they effectively said it's going to be a public-private partnership. So there's a real opportunity for countries like Australia and for companies to be part of that, and to, on the whole, you know, whether it's the village and how that village is maintained, a whole range of different things. So I think there's an opportunity today that hasn't been existed before, and that participating in that rather than bragging rights for we've sent a rocket up and we've got a human up, you know, the why would you do it when there are so many other opportunities that we could play? And I think the other thing, getting back to the consideration of just this whole area, when NASA, when JFK said we're going to the moon, what NASA actually did was work backwards from getting the astronauts back on the ground, or in that case, the sea, before, you know, getting to the moon. And so for a moon village, I think, you know, so that's going to be part of the discussion around the moon village, is because maybe people will go up there that don't want to stay for their entire life. So how do you get them back? So I don't know whether that's been talked about today, but that's something else just to raise, that we would need to have community stakeholder engagement on to understand how that piece works.
Thanks. I've got a question just around STEM and getting more children engaged in STEM in this area. So I guess the last state I lived in was Tasmania, and hearing you speak about what you've got here in Melbourne for year 7, 8 and 9 children to go to sounds absolutely fantastic. And we don't have things like that, particularly in places like Tasmania. So is there going to be any agency funding towards kind of supporting these sorts of things in places like Tassie or other states around Australia?
Yes, Victoria is very well known for being a STEM leading state. The agency is currently working with agreements with all the states and territories, and I do know that our agreement with Tasmania will include opportunities to grow the STEM element. And I'm not 100% sure what those actual activities will be on the ground, but I know it's part of every single agreement that we're working with the states and territories. STEM engagement is something that is my personal driver, and I think during my presentation I said it's one of my KPIs, is to actually figure out how we're going to get the next generation of the workforce in, because we're going to create a lot of jobs and we need people to fill those jobs too, and we want them to be here in Australia. We are looking at it. We don't have our STEM strategy. It's one of the many strategies that are going to underpin our broader strategy. I'm very excited, though, you're going to find that inspiration piece is not just going to be an added-on priority. It's going to be one of our pillars to really hold up the industry. And we're going to need to work with all those organisations that have been put up on the screen to find out which is the best way to direct it. We do not have huge amounts of money, and we're not here to replicate what the education department should do and what the private sector should do and what not-for-profits are doing. We're there to try to coordinate and make sure that if there's gaps, we fill them. And if there is a gap in Tasmania, then I'm interested and we'll find a way to fill it.
But also, I'm from Tassie, and my team's working really hard to try and bring Tasmanians to events on the mainland. Andrew is here today as part of one of those projects. It's not much, but it's a start, and you know that you've got to start. That's just it. And there are Tasmanians in the industry. There's quite a few I've run into, so that's something to be proud of, I think.
I think in the short term too, you shouldn't overlook the resources that you actually have in Tasmania. Don't forget you've got a fantastic resource in the planetarium at the Queen Victoria Museum in Launceston. And what a lot of people don't realise is you've also got a very interesting resource in the Grote Reber Museum, which is attached to the University of Tasmania Radio Telescope Facility. So these are things which don't cost a lot of money to get your students to, and they can be, very inspirational. And this is where, say, in this short term particularly, when there's not a lot of money around, grassroots things like World Space Week, where you work within whatever budget you've got, whatever means you've got, but it gives you access to resources that you can parlay into the budgets you've got at home in Tasmania. You know, there's lots of ways. You don't have to wait for the government handout to start grassroots STEM encouragement.
I also wanted to just to say the last year I was approached by a teacher from Launceston, one of the Launceston College. I forgot now what the name of the college is, but they looking into building something like VSEC, like our VSEC Centre. And so they're talking to VSEC people who actually, whose job now is to go and help other areas to develop something. Because as you probably know, sometimes when you're building something for the first time, it costs more money, and then you know how to suggest people to build something on a smaller budget. The other option is we have John Monash Science School that is on the grounds of Monash University, and it's a first STEM specialized school. Students from anywhere in Australia can actually take classes from year 10 and 11, where they're facilitated by teachers and students from John Monash School. And I'm working with one of the teachers to actually build like a Mars base, open-ended unit, project-based, which then get, you know, we can have stakeholders and they can talk to industry, they can have mentors from industry. So, and of course, VR is another thing. We're developing a lot of VR. We have Opaque Space, which is Victorian from Melbourne. They build whole lunar base that you can see in Science Works until April. So VR is another option to have a shared resource that any students can use.
King's Meadows and Launceston College and Prospect High School, and I've got a list of all done space-based activities. I'm doing primary school visits soon. If you want to get in touch, I can give you a list. And, like, it's a start. Like, we might have ideas to build on it more. But there are some great challenges run by the Space Agency, both NASA and European Space Agency, that schools can just jump on board with the resources they already have. And the challenge-based, you do... Like, there's a whole sorts of things. You can build a habitat, design a habitat. You can
The robotics
one. There's a space apps challenge, which you get in a team, and people are delegated to do things as much as a logo. Logos are very important. I cannot stress enough how important branding was, despite how I just said that. I'm so sorry. I do branding for companies, so I'm very sorry I said that way. But yeah, so logos, so artists, engineers, they get the whole team together. So there are opportunities, and this is the frustration that a lot of people I've had, but people just don't know where to start. But once you can start, it opens up. It's a whole big wide world. So.
Well, don't forget too now with the connectivity we have all around the world, you can actually, in a classroom in Tasmania, you can be connected to the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney or Questacon or the National Space Centre in Leicester in the UK and actually have your classes participate virtually in programs right around the world. So, you know, there's a lot of options there. As I say, that don't really need you to have to outlay a lot of money in the first place.
Yeah, we run a Skype for Scientists program. Like, we could go on and on, couldn't we, with all the things that are available. But like I said, if you don't know where to look to start with, it can be a bit... So once you do know, it's just there's a lot of possibilities.
And there's different budgets.
That's the thing. With. A lot of those things don't require additional resources except for people's time, which is a valuable resource.
Can I do a shameful plug?
But yeah,
the Australian Space Agency, due to popular demand by the public, insisted on us doing merchandise. And we actually launched our merchandise on Monday. Yeah, actually Monday this week. So it hasn't even hit the shelves yet in the public domain, but you can order it online. And if you are at Avalon and you do go to the Victorian stand, you can just do another 10 metres to the Australian Space Agency stand and to be able to get a discount code to get out. But the reason I've said that is that we're actually partnered with Questacon, which is a national science and technology centre that does go around the country. And all the additional funding will go back into education and research. So that's an exciting part. So the mums and dads can support space education by contributing by wearing a very proud shirt with the Australian Space Agency, because I did see that there's a NASA shirt here, and hopefully one day we'll get a few more Australian Space Agency shirts out there.
Yes, definitely. Some of the items are already out of stock. People already cleaned the stock out, so hopefully more will come. So I'd like... Oh, sorry, one more question.
I just wanted to give a brief plug again for the Space Industry Association of Australia, which represents businesses, universities, organisations and individuals who are engaged or interested in space industry. We have a young professional category of membership, which is basically free. Jasmina is a member of the association.
Not in a young category, though.
And it's also a great place for making connections and networking and learning more about how the industry operates in Australia. It's been in existence since, I think, the
early 90s. 92, I think it started, 92. Actually. Yeah.
So we've represented space industry for a long time and have a good relationship with our beloved agency as well. So if anybody is wanting to kind of connect into a broader community, I encourage you to come and talk to me if you'd like to know more about the association. And, you know, this is going to be all of our industries here that will take us to the moon. And I would like to see Vegemite as the first Australian artefact on the moon.
And I mean, what's important with the Space Industry Association is that they have small grants. So if you are a teacher and you join, let's say, the association, you can apply for grants. And if your students have project, you can apply for small grants. You will have lists of all individuals there in contact, so you can network, which is what the point is. So, I think the whole point is that having space agency have now raised awareness among those people who always seen it as, you know, a NASA thing, and then there's this other space agency, which is European Space Agency. But as Megan Clark shared once, she's receiving letters from the head of space agency. She's receiving letters now from six-year-olds saying, oh, wow, I can be an astronaut now. I couldn't have been four, but now, like, in my, you know, in my life before I was six, you know, that was bringing me down, but now I can be an astronaut. So, you know, that I'm looking into bright future. And that's what's important, that we have space agency to raise awareness, and they're basically a shining example that we're trying to follow and support in showing all the possible careers. And as we've shown throughout whole day, space is so inclusive. From being scientists and engineers to being artists, we have ballerinas. We have people who research interaction between doing a ballet and space exploration. There's almost no area of human endeavor that does not touch space. And it's not really surprising because we all look at the same sky. And so that connects us all. So I will thank our panel.